August 15, 2020. It's the Watch from Pedro show.
Thank you. get down on that dance floor. These flashing lights, the noises in my ear. Chitty music, they are always playing. Make a thought to the bar, they charge you a beer. I'm only gonna survive this if I never stop drinking. Yeah. When I see my baby, I look around the room and my head is in a daze. Searching for the one I want, the one that's what chasing.
Saturday in the middle of the month, we got a heat wave here in Piedra. I was doing my hobble this morning. It was already in the 70s. I think we're going up to 91 in Piedra, that's Fahrenheit, which is kind of intense. So everybody probably in quarantino mode. Brother Matt at the Love Grotto still a couple miles south, but I'm not totally man alone, good people, because the wonders of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. Now, make sure I can pronounce this right. Alex Klaber?
Klaber? Yeah, Klaber. Yeah, that's
Klaber.
Klaber,
okay. You heard him, people, all the way from Brighton, England. It's Alex Klaber. And thanks, welcome aboard. I mean, this is a fellow bass brother that I got connected to through bass. And he has made my life easier on a heftin' and also on a feeling, hearing level where people can actually... I get traumatized by what I'm doing. He's here because his bare face stuff is just, it's, what can I say? You know, you got a, I don't know, Hemi, I'm Darm Garlitz with a dragster, right? And I got these big ass tires, Goodyear slicks. And then what, a little Volkswagen tranny? No. You need something to get that power to the wheels. And that's what Alex is invention with his speaker boxes. They've really, and he's working on other stuff to help too, but we'll get into that. I should tell people we started off the show with John Coltrane with Milt Jackson doing The Night We Called It a Day. Now Milt Jackson, his nickname was Bags, so this record was called Bags and Train, and he was a vibes player. After that was Agent Orange with Kickers. Now people, this is another Agent Orange, not the Orange County one. This was the England one. And it was a little bit later than Mike Palm's group. I remember when I first saw Agent Orange. I think Mike's voice hadn't changed yet. So have you ever heard that song, Blood Stains or something? Yeah, that high voice, that's how it is when you're 16 or 15. And Steve Soto was on the bass. We lost him a couple of years ago. He ended up in the Adolescents. Great, great cat. And I remember talking to him. He said he had to sneak out of his room. This was up in Hollywood, a place called The King and I. It later turned into Raji's, and then it was torn down after earthquake. But anyway, this was one of well, let's talk about Alex's, learn about his early. Alex, what's your earliest musical recollection?
God, earliest musical thing. I guess for me, it was cassettes that my dad had got. So, because this would have been early, mid-80s. So he got LPs, but I didn't have a record player. That was downstairs. But I remember listening to, it was really kind of mostly sort of late 60s, early 70s rock. So I had these like three or four peer music. You had to own it, and music cost money, and I was six, seven, eight, that sort of age. One of the bands I remember being on there was this band called Python Lee Jackson, who were, I think, an Aussie band.
Okay.
But I'm listening to them thinking, this sounds like Rod Stewart once I got older. And then due to the wonders of the internet nowadays, I Googled, like, oh, okay, their vocalist died and Rod Stewart stepped in on vocals for this particular tune, which is why it sounded like Rod Stewart.
Which is probably before the Faces?
Yeah, great. In a Broken Dream. Great tune. Great guitar solo. Other things I really remember. Paranoid. I remember Paranoid, Black Sabbath.
Oh, okay.
I remember walking.
You're talking about the second album. You know, the other great thing about cassettes was you could bring them in the car.
Yeah.
So you probably was riding around in the car with your pop listening to music, too.
Yeah, he used to, Hawkwind's Silver Machine.
Ah, yeah, great
tune. I always associate with him. And
you know who
Queen.
Wrote that song? Lemmy wrote that song.
I know it's Lemmy on vocals. Did he write it?
That's right.
Ah.
Yeah, bass brother Lemmy. What about in the pad? Was there any musical instruments?
No. Let me think. My grandpa got me a one of those little, I think they're called reed organs, you know, sort of precursor of keyboards. And I remember fiddling around with that. And then I had a keyboard related. And I briefly played violin when I was seven, but I didn't engage with that.
Was that in school? Violin in school? Okay, yeah. Because I was going to ask, were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
I had this weird right, so when I was eight, I went to like a private school. We call them public schools here, but it was a private one. And I could sing. I had one of those proper sort of boy to soprano treble voices. And I went to an audition for the chapel choir, so it's like sort of the church choir at school. And the music teacher played a note on the piano and asked me to sing it. And I was completely confused because I knew I couldn't make that sound. And as I've got older, I've been like, well, a bit later, I was like, why didn't I sing the note? But I think I've realised that I have, as much as I connect to musical notes and harmony and rhythms, I've obviously got this very deep-seated connection to the sound that makes music. And I was very much aware that I can't make the sound of a piano with my voice.
Ah, so and like you couldn't relate that you could have dissimilar sounds, but they would have the same pitch.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I can't sing that sound.
Right,
this is
you're
probably
not
why I'm obsessive about gear and tone and making stuff sound right. And I think if we look at how music education happens, it's very much rooted in notes and melody and rhythm. But if we look at successful music over the last few decades, a lot of it's about the nuance of sound. Like you think of like the late Peter Green, who's just died.
Ah, great guitarist.
Played great notes, but so much of it was about the sound and the micro timings and the feel and all the sort of stuff that you can't write down in classical notation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what you're getting at is maybe the idea of like tiny tape recorders, like what we call samples. That was it. I think the first machine that could do that was the Mellotron.
Yes.
Which was actually like eight tape recorders or something. And you could play these tapes back at different speeds, and that's where you got your pitch. That's why I had a keyboard.
Oh, I've never seen one. I've just heard tales of people playing them, like, in the studio when recording albums, and it being a sort of multi-person job operating the Mellotron in the studio.
There's that song, Sue Egypt, from Captain Beefheart, and you can hear it. It's on some Led Zeppelin. It's on the right. Beatles, Strawberry Fields.
I know it's on Californication. That's on the title track, Chili Peppers. I'm pretty sure that's a Mellotron.
Yeah, but I mean, going back to the 60s, Sergeant...
Yeah,
Strawberry Fields, that sound, woo, yeah.
Captain Beefheart is another band I associate with my dad, listening, not Trapmars Replica, which I remember buying as a student and being in the sort of CD era in the 90s and being like, right, well, I've spent 15 quid, you know, whatever that is, $25, $30 on a CD. I'm going to listen to this over and over again, even though it is cacophonous and confusing.
Well, your pop probably had Safe as Milk, right?
Yes. And
that's got a lot more blues.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's the kind of musicians his own age. By Trapmars Replica, he's playing with much younger guys.
Yeah, I remember at the time reading the stories about the madness of the recording of that. It's a proper trip.
Yeah,
kind of locked in a house for months. And then,
like a year, yeah. They practiced that thing.
Don Van Vliet, Captain Beefheart, he when he recorded the vocals, he wouldn't wear headphones, or he was just listening for a guide. He was listening to the bleed from the control room or something. It was like...
You know, Mike Barnes has got a great book on him, a writer there in England, and it's called, it's Captain Beefheart, in the second edition. And what he says, that Frank Zappa said there was a little sound coming off the window, because Frank Zappa recorded that album. But they were so practiced. But they had never practiced once with the captain singing. So he had to do that all on the fucking fly when they got done. Now back to you. Did you do the thing, after school, you got the basement band or the garage band or a cellar band or such shit like that?
Well, what happened with me, I went to, I got into music. I was listening to old music, my dad's music. I was listening to, Jethro Tull and The Doors and Cream and stuff like that. And I didn't, I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 78 and I was not liking what I was, because there was the alternative stuff like you were doing in the 80s. But the pop charts were dominated by, 80s music, the 80s sounds. Particularly in the UK, I guess we didn't have the sort of hip-hop thing happening in such a big way over here. And, then I started getting into contemporary music when I went to boarding school. When I was 15, I decided I wanted to be an army officer and went off to this army sixth form college when I just turned 16. And then at that point, I started catching up. I was a few years behind, so yeah. I started listening to... It was 94 when I went there, so I just missed Nirvana, and I started getting into their stuff. I remember having a cassette of Dookie, Green Day, that I'd borrowed off someone, and the first contemporary album I bought was Soundgarden, Super Unknown, which is still an album I listen to over and over again. It's one of my most listened to albums. It's just an outstanding piece of work. And I had a dorm mate, Rick, who played guitar. He'd literally started playing guitar a few months before that, but I was like, oh, wow, he can play guitar. And this was during the sort of Britpop movement over here, so Oasis and Blur and Pulp and all that thing was getting going. But we were more into the... Rick was into some of the Britpop-y stuff, but I was more into basically all this American stuff, kind of grunge and post-grunge, and also getting into Metallica and digging back into metal. So that's... And then he said he wanted me to take up bass to play in his band, and I was like, oh, if I play bass, I'll never get any work done. And I was kind of focused on getting good exam results. I was doing maths and physics and chemistry and difficult A-level stuff before university. And then right at the end of sixth form, so I was 17, a few months before I turned 18, everyone else had finished their exams. I had one exam to go, and I just could not be bothered. And Rick had access. We had a music room, rehearsal room at school. I remember there was a Music Man amp in there. Brand hadn't heard of, but because we had access to it, we just used to take the stuff up to our dorm, and I started messing around on the bass at that point, and Rich showed me a few things, and Peach Doddles, he showed me, a few things, and...
Whose bass?
This was the school stuff.
Okay, the amplifier and the bass. Okay.
Yeah, in retrospect, I'm like, well, we were really fortunate. There was, a big old room with a drum kit and a PA system and all that stuff in there.
Wow.
I think it was an Aria Pro 2, the bass, black one. So I spent, a few weeks when I should have been doing my final exams and stuff, avoiding the work, playing bass. and I remember at that point listening to Cream, Crossroads, and realizing that if you turned the balance control one way, you could hear Jack Bruce much more clearly.
You can mix it. You can remix it yourself.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, because you know how it was like in those late 60s recordings when they were like, we've got stereo, we'll put the guitar on one side and the bass on the other.
Right, and in fact, that's a live recording, so you can hear Jack Bruce roll Eric Clapton.
Oh, he's Jack Bruce. He was the most mind-blowing bassist. Yeah. Even if someone turned up and played bass like that now, yeah, you know, it'd be like, he's a hell of a bassist. But at that point, to step out like that, And be like, no, I'm playing. You know, I don't know how much his sound was the kind of accidental. You know, it's the sound you get when you play that bass he owned and you turn it up very loud through, you know, six Marshall 412s. But God, he was
I owe that man. Oh. I owe that man very much. Look, I want to play a little more Agent Orange here.
Enough day of dollar sun. Just Good morning has begun. I will walk with confidence. confidence, and with a calm, with the scissors and the lock, by the water and the rock, with a memory of family and me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Show, yeah, that was Agent Orange, the England one, not Orange County, with Katie. After that, brand new from Few, the Void, Hot Sweaty Tokyo. I don't know if you've ever been to Tokyo in summertime, but whoa. Well, it's not just the temperature, it's the amount of moisture in the air, like anywhere in the U.S. east of the Rockies.
Right.
Where are my Italian friends? In Bologna. Oh, my God, does it get humid there. After that,
I've done DC in the summertime.
That's hot. That's rough.
That's really hot. See, and you know the worst thing?
What's that?
If you dress for the summer weather, you then go into the office. I was there for work for a fortnight, and you freeze because they've air conditioned it down to what I call it.
That's right. Nightmare.
Makes no sense.
That's why we're spoiled here in Pedro. But it's not a north-south thing. It's really east or west of the Rockies. You know,
right.
Montreal in the summer is sweatier than you fucking can believe. St. Louis, oh my God. Okay.
Right.
Then after brand new from Mr. Tom in Pittsburgh, by the way, Pittsburgh. Oh my God. Oh man. But beautiful town and stuff. Jin Menken, he's got a brand new record. It's called Hot, Wet, and Sassy. Will Johnson after that brand new out of Austin with I Am Back at the Window Again. Brand new from Tropical Fuckstorm, Legal Ghost. Guided by Voices, Bob Pollard, putting out a new album, Immortals. Pat Irish after that, brand new from Upstate New York, where it's fucking sweaty. Pop Comp Art Gallery. And finally, Kleenex by Agent Orange. And so what about this Agent Orange band? I should get back to it. You're doing bass at school and you're not doing your exams, so let's pick it up from there.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, that was right at the end of school. I guess you'd call it high school. You know, I'm an August birthday, so I turned 18 just after I left. But then I went to university to study mechanical engineering. I dropped out of the army system. I learned that I was good at giving orders, but very bad at following them unless I agreed with them. So a fundamental issue in the military. So I went my own way. And literally the second person I met at university, well, it was two people I met simultaneously, but yeah, he was the second and third people I met. One of those two people was a bassist, which is like, what's the chance of that?
Yeah.
The guy next door to me was a pianist with perfect pitch, also played drums and was studying engineering. And then just round the corridor, we're there in halls, so we're in catered halls, first year at Bristol Uni. Walk round, we bump into these two guys, start chatting, you know, they're into music, one of them's a saxophonist, the other one is a bassist. And I'm like, that summer, I borrowed my mum's classical guitar, taken the top two strings off it and been trying to play bass, you know, for a couple of months.
By top people, he means high strings. He don't mean the two low strings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the B and the G. The B and the E. The one that's confusingly tuned.
I thought a bass was just a guitar with four strings.
Yeah, exactly. This guy John Ballard, he brought his old bass, his cheap bass with him, which was like a Squire Precision. He'd got a Stingray at home that he'd just recently got, so that was his treasured possession. He didn't dare bring it in case someone stole it. And he brought a guitar with him as well. And he was like, I want to get better at guitar. He got a band back home, so he was like, you borrow my bass. So it's literally, you know, second person, third person I met at uni, lends me a bass and lent me a little practice amp that he'd got. And that was me for the first few months of university, you know, doing a bit of engineering and just, you know, every day when I was back, getting in my room, cranking this tiny little amp up and playing bass through it.
Were you trying to learn songs off records? You didn't take lessons from a person, right?
No, I was, this was 1996. And I was just new to using the internet. That was kind of, because university, we got access to it. And I remember downloading loads of tabs for things. Rage Against the Machine, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, because actually those bands of the 90s, the early 90s, the bass was mixed quite loud in those, and there's some interesting bass lines. I mean, obviously the tab's often wrong and simplified, but I was sort of picking my way through that. And John had also got a transcription book of Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and then I had a go at that and started digging into the Chili Peppers, and that was probably the moment when I went from being like, right, I'm into metal and rock, but I was quite a metal. I didn't look like one, but I was being quite metal, rock, grunge, that sort of thing.
Well, you went to school in Bristol?
Yeah.
Okay.
University in Bristol.
Okay, right. I understand. But the pop group was from Bristol, and they're from the late 70s, and they had heavy bass, like dub.
Oh, that's interesting. Because Bristol, when I was there at Bristol Uni, it was the trip hop movement was really big. So you've got Massive Attack, Portishead,
Tricky. I got to record with Tricky, but the pop groups, they were like teenagers in the late 70s, and they made this band. I'm just curious, because you were in the town. Now,
but
it was almost 20 years.
I'm not from Bristol. I basically had 5 years of my life there.
I understand.
Like 18 to 23, I think it was.
But you're almost 20 years later, too, and a lot can change.
Yeah. But it's a cool town, Bristol.
It's a harbor. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. August 15, 2020, special edition. Special guest, Alex Claver. Hold tight for hour two. August 15, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Down 24,000 hours. to be found. Go right ahead and bond on. Now there's certain things for which us humans are known. One of them is that we love to bond. Some folks bond about every chance they get. Been happening for millennia. It ain't over yet. Bond down, bond down. Get yourself over to the boning part of town. As long as there's consenting adults to be found, just go right ahead and bond down. Now some women like women, some men like men. Don't you worry about who's boning who, my friend. Heterosexual, homosexual, and all in between. It's all good, people. You know what I mean. Bone down. Bone down. As long as there's consenting adults to be found.
tried to bake them cakes. Epitome of a good monk, caring so much yet being such fun. And on those nights she stayed at home, she'd sit and drink to oil her moans. Think back to days not gone so far, when men were more than cash and cars.
Show, start off the second hour with The Reluctant Ancestor, 24,000 Hours. This is Alex's first attempt at songwriting on his own. But before we get to that, we got to find out the mystery of this Agent Orange band. Now, how'd the English one come together?
Okay, so we, I've been playing bass for literally a few months. But I've always been excessively optimistic, I think. I'm always like, oh, I can do this, you know? So I was immediately, from the moment I was there, just a complete beginner bassist. And I'm not a natural talent. I know I'm creative and I've got a sort of different way of approaching things. And I'm good at coming up with, nowadays I feel I'm good at coming up with riffs, but I'm not somebody you can drop into a band. And I just don't have that quick an ear, but I've got. So anyway, I started trying to find musicians, and I basically had probably a year or so of jamming with people and gradually putting a band together. I've met a guy, Dan Fair, so he plays guitar on those Agent Orange tracks. He's a great guy, we're still good friends, and we managed to recruit. After a while, we auditioned two drummers, chose one, and then he was a no-show at the next rehearsal, so we went back to the second one. Turned out the second drummer could write songs, so he became the main songwriter. And then he got his mate along, so that was Jake Doran, and again, still good friends with Jake. And then he recruited his flatmate or hallmate from uni to come along and record us, because he knew about how to work in a four track and stuff like that. So we had one Easter where all the other students from my flat had gone home. So we set up in there with a load of mattresses and drum kit and really disturbed the neighbours. We got some recordings. And then we persuaded James, the guy who'd come along to do the teching, to have a go at singing. And that's how we got another guitarist, who I always forget there was a second guitarist in the early days. The band name, I didn't know, we didn't know about there being the LA punk band from the... Were they late 70s they began?
Well, I think...
Real Agent Orange.
79 or 80 or something like that.
Yeah. But, like I say, it's... The world was different back then, wasn't it, in how you consumed music and how you found out about music.
Absolutely.
I mean, now, I find it really weird now in that I I feel music had so much value back then because you had to seek it out. It was like a mission, you know, and if there wasn't something, you'd have to go to a shop to find it.
Well, especially this kind of music, Alex, the way you hurt, because the Square Johns in the racket and shit, they didn't want to deal with it. So you only knew about this shit through fanzines.
Yes. And I, where was I going?
We were talking about how the band got named.
Yes. The band name, you know what a nightmare it is coming up with band names.
Yep.
And I don't know how we came up with that one. In retrospect, nowadays, how would it name the band that? I was actually, funnily enough, I was reading about the Agent series, because there's a whole rainbow series of biological weapons and chemical weapons that the US government created, Agent Blue and Agent Orange, and there's a ton of them. and I was like, I can't believe me and my mates decided to name a band after such a hideous thing.
Yeah. And you know, it came back and bit us in the ass. It got a lot of our soldiers cancer and shit.
The impact decades on, it's just
right,
great.
And it's left it's left scars in Vietnam way after the war. It was a big mistake. But what I asked you was, did you guys record before you played a gig?
Kind of, yeah. We were just sort of jamming and trying to get song ideas down, and then let me think. That was the.
Well, I'm curious, what was the first gig like?
I remember being rooted to the, we had our first gig was booked, and then we got another sort of mini gig, which a sort of small one as a practice, which we did the day before. I remember that first gig, so it was at my bandmate's hall of residence, so there was not many people there, you know, probably 20 people or something. And I remember being so scared, one leg just shook.
No, that happens to me a lot still.
Yeah.
Here, I want to play some more Reluctant Ancestor.
Put it back, and I keep going on and on and on. I'm scratching as I sing this song. I'm wondering what to do. I'm wondering if bunga's in my shoes. Oh, help me, God, oh, help me, please. I'm running out of breath to say my please, and it goes on and on and on. Will someone help me end this song? I never wanted you to see how I could be. I'll let you know what you should know. I'll let you know where I could go. But I should know where I should know. And though I'll go where I don't know. And where I go, well, no one knows. But you should know. I know, oh yes, I know. I'll scratch that it fit on my face. I wanna send it from this place. I want you to come back to me. Though I rant and rave like Captain B. I am the man, I am the man. I've got my glass of coke.
don't have the rhythm, you don't have anything. It's called Everything I Say Just Goes Right Through Her Heart.
Unwind, and you can step down the stairs into my soul. Wear a jacket, baby. Oh, cause it's very, very cold. Oh, I wish it could be different. I wish that I could find something of importance in the kingdom. The kingdom of my mind.
Thank you. 21st century blues. It's a chance for me and for you to make a change in how we live our lives, to reconsider what once we desired, to find the reason within our plastic disease. Credit cards coming out of my ears, owes to mortgages, a long career. Ian Jury would lend me a fiver, but no one is earning dollars off a given entitlement. Credit cards coming out of my ears, owes to mortgages, a long career. Ian Jury would lend me a fiver, but no one is earning dollars off a given entitlement.
I know James Jamerson had this great quote about, oh shit, we didn't, I didn't go through all the songs that we started the second hour off with. What a moron. Well, I got it, you know, and here we are in the second block of music. After 2,400 hours that Electra has, we had the bass only, isolated bass track of James Jamerson doing What's Going On from Marvin Gaye. Because, he was talking about recording with Smokey Robinson, and he said about take 243. The rigor mortis started to set in. After that Plastic Ono band, Yoko Ono with Enig was a guest singing, Wait for the D-Train Float from K, Hold Company from Swenson Clane, Sam Bennett Bone Down, Bombas Prendon, Force Delight, Debris, Factor, there's a DC band, I don't think they ever did gigs, just recorded, and The Reluctant Single Mother. And then this batch of songs we just heard was a demo you made, called Scratchin' for the Reluctant Ancestor. Everything I Say Just Goes Right, Peter Lochner from the old Cleveland scene. Blood Drained Cows out of New Mexico, that's Greg Turner from Cream Magazine and Angry Simone's the Kingdom of My Mind. Damon Smith on stand-up bass with Flayed Son. Foom, brand new, Tasted. Flying Vipers, some brand new, some good dub bass there. Son of Scorpio. And finally, The Reluctant. Not the reluctant ancestry people. With Lend Us a Fiver. Okay, continue on, Alex.
There's quite a fun story behind that song, Lend Us a Fiver.
Bring it.
Yeah, you know, you're Ian Jury and the Blockheads.
Sure.
You know, great band. Rock and roll. Great lyricist, you know, just so cool. And sadly, I was meant to be seeing him at a festival, and he was ill. I think he was playing Glastonbury one year, but then he was ill and couldn't, and then he died. And then a Blockhead song was used on a credit card advert. I'm trying to think which one it was. I think it might have been Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. And I was so offended this would have been about 2005-ish. I was so offended at them using a song by the Blockheads on a credit card advert that I was like, I've got to write a song about that. That's where the lyrics came from, hence the Lend Us a Fiver.
Ah, so you're it was a reply. Yeah.
Yeah, that time, and you'll remember it from the first decade of the 2000s was an era where in both the US and the UK, and probably a lot of the developed world, the Western world or whatever, banks had realized that and card companies were just throwing credit at people, weren't they? And that's what led to the financial crash and all this sort of disaster.
That's right.
And it was like, make people spend money. And I'm like, why is the world obsessed with making you borrow money so you can buy stuff you don't need, so you can be into more debt to pay, you know? Hence that song.
That's a good point. And you know, Mr. Dury, he was born with a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
And he's quite heroic, you know, get up there and I don't give a fuck, I'm going to sing my song. I really liked his spirit. He was on that label Stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Devo had some, I think the first records in England was from on Stiff. And great, I think their slogan was, if it ain't Stiff, it ain't worth a fuck. Or something like that. And You know, but that's what music's for, you know. If you feel something on your chest and you want to get it out, you like you're saying, these people from above are sending down these messages. How else can you defend yourself except with some artistic expression?
Yeah, because like that band of mine at uni that we called Agent Orange because we didn't know any better, that was one where I played bass and I was very much, I played so far ahead of the beat.
Yeah. And we learned later, right, that you want to play on bass, you want to play actually a little behind the beat. So the kick drum has a good percussive. The drums, you want to be a little behind the drums so they get the first hit in there because their notes don't last that long. Yeah.
I was so much topspin back then.
That's okay. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, August 15, 2020.
Energy.
Special guest, Alex Klaver. Hold tight for hour three. August 15, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
We'd like to ask you to expose yourself with this compassion. We puppet masters of India, we are exploited for their cause. The advancement of others will melt those wily media bombs.
Down where
enemy. So started the third hour off with In the Back of My Mind. It's a Prac tape from The Reluctant. And then we had Crane and Skip doing Here I Am in Chinatown, another Prac tape from The Reluctant. So what ended up happening with Agent Orange?
That band.
I asked because of The Reluctant and then The Reluctant Ancestor, obviously, the band.
Yeah, I moved to London. For work and life and whatever, started a band, and I wasn't an experienced writer. I'd only co-written, and so consequently we started out playing some covers, and I was like, okay, that's cool, we'll do a gig, and then it just stayed as a covers band. So I played three gigs with them and quit. I don't like playing covers. Maybe it sounds weird, but I feel like I'm pretending.
Yeah, Halloween.
Yeah, it just sucks my soul out. Like, I couldn't act. I'm only any good at being me. So that's the way I am.
So if you're going to cover a song, you say you should reinterpret it and make it your own kind of...
Yeah. And that's fun to do that. But you know what? To do that well...
Yeah.
...is as much work as writing another bloody song.
Oh, so yeah.
I'd rather write a new song.
Well, Jimmy did it good with Hey Joe.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And he also
And All Along the Watchtower.
Yeah, I was just going to say. And story I heard about that, he heard it once. When it first came out, and he said, I want to cover it. mean, that's, he balls out. But you know, the Band of Gypsy Records actually the first gig. I mean, Jimmy was balls out like this. Here, I want to play Malcolm's thing.
Blood on living TV. I've been so proud to be an explosion in the future. Broadcasting up the needs. Not a vacuum ahead. A Yankee aristocrat. A special breed of woman. Descended from food crafts.
through the wine. And a bicycle on the boy's birthday. Pictures of rumor being spread around town by the women and children. Soon will be shipbuilding. Well, I ask you, the boy said, yeah, they're gonna take me the chance, but I'll be back by Christmas. It's just a rumor being spread around town. Somebody said that someone got killed in. They're saying that people get killed in a result of our shipbuilding. With all the will in the world, fighting for dear life, when we could be diving for peace.
you dollar? From London.
All right.
Thank you.
my time down here. I struggle far too long. I'm leaving you right now, my friend. Here is my song.
Show, that was Malcolm's theme, another practet from The Reluctant Shipbuilding, from Little Annie and Paul Wallfish, and Kid Congo Powers is on here playing guitar. Sernag Zuba, this is the fifth part of Frank E. Lasty's brother Koya, great bass man from Belgrade, but playing guitar for this movie soundtrack. It's the fifth part I played last five episodes. And then finally, Funeral Song by The Reluctant. Huge opus magnum. Magnus opus.
Yeah. I was pleased with that.
You started it, but it got out of your hands, and you let it go. But then, what about this company, Bareface?
Yeah, so what happened was, so I was playing bass, and I then started the... When we moved to Brighton, which is another place by the sea, and I started doing jamming with various people, and basically there was the critical point was my wife. Were we married at that point? No, I don't think we were. It was before we were married, but she did an evening class painting, and I was like, right, well, if you're going out for the evening, I'm going to try and write a song, write and record a complete song that evening, and then I do the same again the next week. And there is nothing like being like, I am going to finish it. So that band got rolling, and I play loud. I play bass loud. I'm always loud, a lot of bottom ends. I'll use really noisy effects, pedals at times. And basically, I'm an engineer. I want to know how stuff works. And I started looking into the stuff I was looking to buy, and it's all expensive and for what it seemed to be. So I decided to make my own stuff. And I wrote about it on a forum because I've been on active on bass forums, and before that, the Bottom Line newsletter since, you know, at some point in the late 90s. And it just gathered a bit of momentum, and I was like, right, I'll build two of these. I'll build 10 of these. I'll keep two. I'll sell eight. I'll finally turn a profit on something musical. And that'll be that. And I'll go back to continue on with my day job. Well, people were interested because I had all these ideas. I think it's obviously something I've got a bit of a knack for. I remember the first time I got stoned at university, sitting there listening to the music that was on, and I could see the sound. I could see the sound waves and see them in a really physical way.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to other people about that, and no one has... And I think I have a weird way of connecting with physical things in a way that means I understand them at quite a deep level. So sound waves and all that, it made sense to me. So the design work made sense. And obviously I've got engineering training. I've got a degree in that. But something about that and the playing bass, it was all sort of came together. And, yeah, pretty much like the first thing was good, which was nice.
You know, I have one experience like that because I only played one gig on LSD. I didn't know I didn't know there was a gig that night and I had taken it. And then, hey, luckily it was in Pedro, so I didn't have to go far. But yeah. I couldn't play. I didn't know what any of the songs were. I didn't know. I was tripping balls. And what it seemed like was I didn't have a bass guitar. I had a giant tube of toothpaste. And I was squeezing this motherfucker. And the bass sound was toothpaste coming out the end. So I would chop it into shorter parts or longer parts. And I would just start and stop with Georgie and D. Boone. And somehow I got through the whole gig, and then I ran out of the place. I was using somebody else's amp and just ran home. Yeah, so I had a little bit of sound as a visual thing, but only once.
Yeah.
Only once.
But, yeah, what that meant, though, that what that did, what the Bareface thing did to the band was it kind of sucked out all my creative energy because people, you know, engineer. The word engineer comes from ingenieur, ingenious. It's a... True engineering is a very creative thing, and I could see that I could actually make a living doing this potentially, and it was, you know, more interesting, not as well paid, but more interesting than my day job, and it kind of gathered momentum. I sort of put all this energy, the my songwriting and music making energy, because in that band, The Reluctant, I was the by far the main songwriter, the only lyricist, the lead vocalist, and the bassist, so I was doing a lot.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and then the other thing I noticed was playing a gig where you're the front man through the gear that you've designed, and essentially you are testing when you're playing it on a gig, you can't get into I kept being pulled out of my musician, front man, you know, sort of the emotional, musical headspace into my engineering headspace. That doesn't work.
You couldn't see the forest from the trees. You couldn't get perspective.
Yeah, I couldn't do art. It was becoming just like test driving, you know?
Right, lab rat.
Yeah. So that band kind of petered out. And then for quite a long time, this would be about 2016, I just sporadic. I'd play bass for testing stuff for work and bit stuff like that. I don't really like learning other people's stuff. The only album I'd pretty learned start to finish a long time ago was Blood Sugar Sex Magik, because Flea's amazing. And then I learned quite a few of Jacko's things because it's just so musical and challenging. Yeah, but other than that, I never really, you know, played other people's things. And then when we had that Brexit vote in 2016, I think it was, so, you know, Britain voting by the finest of margins to leave the European Union, which is complete madness. I was so angry. I was so fucking livid. The only way I could deal with it was to start writing again. And then what's happened over the last few years, I've been writing more and more. And then when lockdown happened, you know, a few months ago, I was like, right, I'm going to make an album. I'm going to get on and crack on with this. And I've got my phone. I use my phone like as a, you know, portable recorder, even the voice memo thing and an iPhone. And that's everything's on there that I've been doing. And I went through and counted up and found I had exactly 100 riffs or songs, if that makes sense. So I'd count a group of riffs or a group of changes or group of ideas as one thing, or a lone riff that didn't have anything to go with it. Literally 100 of these on there. And I'm like, and that's like a couple of years of output of stuff. And obviously some of it's rubbish, but some of it's great. There's some great riffs in there. So I've been like, right, I'm going to start finishing songs. I'm going to start writing lyrics. So the YouTube thing that I started doing for work about 6 weeks ago has kind of taken some momentum out of that, because obviously that's going to make me money for running Bareface, helping spread the word about our gear. But I'm about 6 songs in now with lyrics written, not necessarily all finished, but and rough arrangements together. So it's just bass and vocals and lyrics. Nothing's recorded, and I've just started the space we've got at work that I'm doing the YouTubing from. We're turning that basically into rehearsal / recording space, because it's really good for demoing the gear. And it's also great because everyone at Bareface plays instruments and is in bands. So it's like, you know, best perk of the job ever. So hooked up with the drummer from The Reluctant, and we're just starting doing stuff again. So give me a year, because it's going to take a while in between running Bareface and wrangling 3 children. And I should have a great album of original material, which I'm excited about. I feel I've got like a decade of learning. And the other thing that's affected me, until about sort of 4-5 years ago, I was quite happy with a lot of things. I was like, I'm not angry anymore. I watched, you've probably seen it, you know, amazing Paul Simon album, Graceland. I rewatched the documentary about the sort of making of that, the classic album documentary. And Paul Simon was talking about why he thought Graceland was such a successful album, was that there was a lot of, you know, anger and complexity and, you know, the apartheid thing and all that behind it. But he doesn't write angry music. He writes positive music. And I thought, I'm the total opposite of that. Whenever I'm writing, it's because I'm livid about something, basically. And I'd stopped being angry about stuff because I'd left my annoying corporate job. Bareface was progressing all right. You know, there was only a handful of us working there, so it wasn't too stressful. The money seemed to be working out all right. I'm not someone who spends a lot of money. I don't need that much money to live on, you know. But then over the last, 5 years or so, the rise of the political problems globally, I've been ranting at the tabloids causing people to commit suicide. I've been ranting about slavery. I'm one of those. I'm very much aware I'm from a very fortunate, privileged background. You know, I'm a white English person with a great education. I had a loving family. You know, it's not like I haven't had the odd challenge in life. But I'm coming from a place that don't have that. And so many other privileged people don't realise how big an issue this is. You know.
I think I got what you mean, man. You want to fucking express yourself through your art about stuff you feel is important. And I'm totally with that. And I think that was one of the basic things of the movement going way back anyway.
Yeah, well, I remember that. I realized, because when I first came across you through Bass Player magazine, and this, I realized that although I'm not someone who necessarily plays punk, I love that kind of that punk aesthetic, that DIY, that express yourself.
Well, but to me, that's the main point of the movement, because the style, as far as I'm concerned, there was never a punk style. It was always a state of mind. That's up to the music people to come up with their own style.
Yeah, and I think that's I just let people do what they want to do. Let people be who they want to be.
Yeah.
Stop pigeonholing everyone, you know? And the world is changing. Yeah. Things are changing in a big way, but there are so many people, many of whom have a lot of power, trying to stop it changing, trying to keep everyone in their boxes.
Absolutely.
Often because keeping everyone in their boxes is important for their wealth and their power.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I can't wait to hear this record. So you get it done, you come back on the show, let's fucking play the songs and talk about it.
I will do.
Okay, brother. People, it's been the August 15, 2020 edition of Wap Pedro Show special guest, Al Kraber. Keep your powder dry.